From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, James McAvoy, clearly one of the best actors in the world.
Without a doubt. Without too many doubts from myself, yeah.
You know, as long as you don't doubt it, that's the important thing. But let's just take a look at the career. Let's see now. From Starter for 10 to Wanted, from Welcome to the Punch to Atonement, from Last King of Scotland to, well, let's see, X-Men First Class, from X-Men Days of Future Past to Filth. His career has spanned a lot of ground. Not only that, but in almost every instance, he's worked the material, attracted to material, I think, that deals with emotional violence. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I would, actually. You know, maybe some of them don't, but I am attracted to dynamic moments in people's lives and to, I suppose, trauma and all that kind of stuff. And especially the last couple of years, it's been a lot about emotional and psychological trauma, even into something like Days of Future Past, but certainly in something like Filth, which are about people struggling for equilibrium and for to claim ownership of their personalities and the direction that they're walking. So, yeah, I have been quite into that.
It's interesting, though, because I'm guessing as you're one of the producers on Filth, one of the things I love about Irvin Welsh's work is that so much of it is about the modern man self-medicating because the definition of masculinity has shifted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much your character in this piece.
Yeah, I don't think he fits into the modern definition in the world that puts the labels on. He is somebody who is... he's struggling to define himself, but the outside definitions are complicating it as well.
Yeah, he's so busy defining everybody else, though. I mean, you can sort of see it's his way of sort of setting the world into place, is putting everybody in a very specific box.
I think so, but I think also he's got this, you know, the title Filth has a double meaning, I suppose, because it's how we refer to the police, but it's also sort of the content of the film is quite filthy. I think it's got a triple meaning. It's also how he regards himself. He thinks he's worthless and he hates himself, he loathes himself, and therefore to avoid the repercussions of feeling that way about yourself, he has for years, probably for most part of his life, been projecting outward and pretending that he is this strong person. As long as he can project outward and project that hatred or that self-loathing or that definition of filth on other people, then he's all right. But I think we meet him at a time in his life where the barriers in his mind are starting to break down and he can no longer keep up that facade for himself of who he is. So he's desperately trying to label those around him to avoid looking in the mirror and going, I'm nothing, I'm worthless. Because when he does finally do that in the movie, when all the pretense and all the delusion or the self-delusion is gone, he makes a decision to do something and it doesn't work out so well for him. But it's the only decision he could make, and it's why he's been so desperately fighting for his life, throughout all of his life, to label others, to judge others, to discriminate against others, to push others down, to make them weaker, to make him stronger. Because at the end of the day, if he ever really looks in the mirror, he'll know he's a weak man, and that's it's the end for him.
It's funny because you think about the last few films you've done between Trance and Welcome to the Punch, Filth, and these two X-Men movies. They're about people sort of trying to maintain control and chaos, aren't they?
Yeah, totally. And I'm not really an actor who goes out chasing projects. I don't go, listen, this is the kind of thing I want to explore this year or anything. So it is just the stuff that came my way.
But you still said yes to it, though, didn't you?
Oh, totally. I mean, I'd be daft not to because it's dead interesting, but I do still feel lucky that, and I'm slightly weirded out by it as well, that so many jobs of late have been about kind of mental infirmity and somebody standing on a peak and trying to keep a balance, you know, and whatever way they fall is going to be a big fall. So it has been quite strange, actually, because it is something that I'm quite interested in, and it is something that I've had a lot of experience of in my life. So getting to explore all that, even playing Macbeth on stage, was, you know, him and Bruce are probably two of the most mentally ill people I've ever played. And
both surrounded by people who in their own ways trying to help. And in each case, these guys are basically pushing that help away.
Oh, yeah, completely. There's that whole thing in Macbeth. I think he feels like the world has harmed him, the world has wronged him, and that it will never work out right for him. He's never going to have that child. So he's going to take something back. And he knows that he's screwed. The witch is telling him at the beginning, you will be the king. But he turns to his friend and says, but you're going to have children. And they'll be kings. So I know I'm finite. I know my reign is finite. Mine will never be a legacy. I will never have a family. So I'm going to enjoy it while I'm here. I'm going to take as much while I'm here. And I'm going to try and hurt the world that hurt me. And I'm going to try and hurt the God that hurt me. And I don't care what my fate is. I'm going to keep going till the end. I'm going to drive hard to the gates of hell. And I'm going to do it on purpose. And I think that that's something it's very conscious. For me, it's very conscious with him. Of course, he loses control of all the situations that he's in. And he doesn't enjoy it. It's not about that. It's about self-harm. It's about hurting yourself to hurt the world, to just take something back, you know? For me, that was what he was about.
By the way, it's the treatment, my guest who's showing off his radio training is James McAvoy. We're talking about a number of things he's done. But Filth, as you were describing Macbeth, you were also describing Bruce.
Mm.
You realize that, don't you?
Yeah, totally. I played...
I mean, PTSD... He works this, he harms people with his hands, he's probably just killed somebody. I mean, that's definitely the implication in the book.
Yeah, no, I know.
And so...
he's so Bruce. When I played, I think I did Filth first. And then went on to do Macbeth shortly after. Actually, I did a movie in between them, but yeah, Bruce formed a large part of my Macbeth as well. But Bruce strangely formed a bit of Professor X in Days of Future Past this time as well.
We should say Bruce is the cop who thinks he's on the verge of a promotion.
Yeah, in his mind he
again,
is.
Because
yeah.
Again, if you're talking about the witches foretelling Macbeth's future,
yeah,
this is the same sort of thing. He's basically foretelling his own future. He's laying out for us what's going to happen. And we think about what Professor X is, with these powers of telepathy and his mental prowess, we can sort of foresee, and he has to decide what action he's going to take to some extent and what the future is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
These things all do connect, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do. You're kind of, and they're all about fate a little bit. Maybe felt less so, but there's feel like the writing is on the wall. His fate is set, I think, from the first bit of the movie. And I think as an audience, that's why you can stick with Filth, because Filth would become... I think Filth would become a hard movie to watch if it was just about a nihilistic, discriminatory, racist, bigoted, sexist cop. And we're meant to enjoy that for 30 minutes. I think that would be a tough ride. But I think hopefully the audience understand through just their experience of drama that within the first 5 minutes you go, right, if you're Iago, if you're Richard III, if you're a villain... then we can stick with it because we know you're going to die. We know you're going to get the ultimate reward for your misbehaviour. And along the way, we're either going to we'll be shocked at your behaviour and hate your behaviour and be amazed at your behaviour, or we're going to get some insight into your behaviour. And we get, hopefully in Filth, we do both of that. But I think when you start watching a movie like that, you know... I think the audience just know the contract is, if I stick with this, I'm going to get something that in some way, not validates it, but in some way deepens it, you know what I mean? Because you can't sit through a movie with 90 minutes of that, because it doesn't mean anything, you know?
But also, it's a very old school anti-hero thing of basically sort of grabbing the audience's attention and saying, this is who this is. This swaggering libertine pig, and ask the audience just how much of this do we take on faith, and how much does he deserve to be in the center of the screen?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that that's a question that an audience will be asking. Should I be watching this? Is this worthy of my attention?
But isn't that part of the reason that you want to do it in the first place? Because I can't imagine you didn't pick up that book and go, I've got to do this. I see exactly who Bruce
I didn't
is.
Read the book because they told me not to.
Really?
They gave me the script first.
Okay.
I finished that script and I thought, I immediately want to do this. This one, I think it's the best script I've ever read. And I was enjoying it, and all this misbehaviour and this sort of abusive behaviour towards others, I found a little bit shocking. I found it funny at times. I found it repellent at times. But I was definitely compelled. And around about page 29, page 30, I started to go, I need something more, though. I'm starting to think, if this is all it is, then I'm not interested. And I turned the page and I started to get more, and I started to get what the film is really about. It's about a man having a mental breakdown. And his misbehaviour is a symptom of his illness. And once I found that out, it carried me through the rest of the movie, because it was a sort of investigation of his sickness and just realising how sick he is and how multi-layered his sickness is, and how much that, for me, still doesn't require any kind of forgiveness. And yet I still felt I didn't want to be him. I didn't want to be next to him. I didn't want to have a drink with him. But I felt for him in his story.
For me, the moment in that movie, and one of the things I thought maybe made you want to do this, is there's a scene where Bruce goes from interrogating and humiliating a potential informer to running into a widow, a woman who he's probably just kind of made a widow through his own incompetence.
Mm.
And we see that shift of him just, again, from being bullying to completely lost. And I mean, and that's all the same scene, and going from literally indoors to outdoors.
Yeah.
And it's a funny thing, too, about that character, and the movie really plays on this. He doesn't know what to do himself when he's outside.
I didn't notice that so much myself. That's interesting. You're right. There's this strange, well, I think the elements as well. You're suddenly elemental. You're suddenly instinctual. You're suddenly not able to, I don't know, pretend in this sort of sophisticated, structured world that man has created. You have to confront who you are, because the world around you reflects who you are. But that scene was, yeah, I don't know if it was one of the scenes that definitely made me want to do it, but the outdoor scene definitely, in terms of how quickly he goes from being abusive to being vulnerable. Just because that's, to me, that's interesting. Showing somebody be dynamic and being extreme is what I'm interested in as an audience member. So getting the chance to do that as a performer is great. And I know that within me there is an ability to feel like that in real life. I think we all do. We are able to be extreme in our have polar extremes almost in our behaviour and in our characteristics. It's a very difficult thing to put on camera, because it's just a difficult thing to perform or to fabricate. But that was the challenge of this one, was to keep pushing the audience around and keep demanding of them to stick with him while he changes from moment to moment to moment. But yeah, it was strange doing that scene in the florist, where I abused this florist. It was a nice scene to do and I enjoyed it, but it was with my sister. My sister played that girl, played Estelle. And so I don't actually touch her, I don't physically abuse her, but I do allude to the fact that if she doesn't give me what I want, I will maybe come back and rape her. With a little bit of floral-based poetic imagery involved. And so that was really quite strange. But cool.
Well, we'll take a break so James McAvoy can deal with some family issues. During the break, it's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Ever wish you could hear KCRW's signature music programming wherever and whenever you want? You can with Eclectic 24. Our ever-expanding all-music stream is available worldwide 24/7 online. You can listen to KCRW's diverse music mix on the go or in the car through your iPhone or Android phone app. KCRW's Eclectic 24, where and when you want it. Check it out. Go to kcrw.com/eclectic24.
Welcome back. We were like wasting too much good time in the break. It's The Treatment. My guest is James McAvoy. He's got two terrific movies out right now, of Filth and the newest of the X-Men films, X-Men Days of Future Past. Let's talk for a moment about Charles Xavier and you playing a character that so many people feel they have ownership of.
It's a privilege, actually. When I took over in First Class, I felt, you know, the weight of the four films or the five films that had come before, and I definitely felt that and was aware of it. Also, having been a fan of Patrick Stewart since a wee boy, really, I was aware of it. It's in the years between First Class and Days of Future Past that I have kind of deepened in my appreciation of just how important it is to the fans of the material, and to be the custodian of something that they care about so much feels like a privilege. But at the same time,
the care is a very politic word to use in this case. They can be a little obsessive, and as a comics reader myself and a fan of the Chris Claremont stuff, I know what those fans are like.
Yeah,
and,
man.
And there's people still upset that Wolverine is played by somebody who's more than 5'6".
I know. But at the same time, I also feel nervous because in X-Men First Class, we took the character in a slightly different direction.
Very different direction, actually.
Well, I thought it was quite different, yeah. But in this one, he's the direction is even further away from what we usually see of Charles, certainly from what I did in First Class, but definitely what Patrick has always done.
But this is the most adult sort of take on a Marvel comic I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think
I'm glad you said that. I was really proud of Fox, but also Brian and Simon, our writer and our director, and Simon's also a producer, for doing that, because, you know, it can get very plot driven, and it can get very, you know, X-Men definitely has that at times.
And people want to see the X-Men.
You want to see the cool stuff, you want to see the cool powers and all that. But X-Men's always been about something a little more socio-political. It's always been about the internal conflict of these characters fighting for self-acceptance and control over their abilities, but also their emotions. It's always been about that. And that's, for me, that's what makes X-Men stand apart from other superhero worlds.
Well, you've done another sort of graphic novel thing before. You did Wanted, which is very different.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
well, the graphic novel itself was even really different from the movie we did, but
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I meant, that it was close to one of the things I thought was so interesting about these two things is they're both very different from the source material, both Wanted and these two X-Men films that you've done. And I just wonder, you find yourself hearing from, again, the devoted.
I think that from people that watched Wanted and also were fans of the book beforehand, I think, yeah, you get a lot of stick from them, because Wanted really is it takes the kind of central idea of a young person who gets told that they are actually greater than what they believed and that they have these abilities, and that's kind of it in terms of its relation to the source material. So, yeah, it's very, very, very different. But Wanted is one of those ones that keeps coming back to me, and people are like, oh my God, I watched it last night, because it's always on TV. it must be cheap for networks to buy it. Whereas with X-Men, I've had less jip from the fans, actually.
I've not
had a lot. Yeah, well, because I do think that First Class and Days of Future Past, I can't speak for the other X-Men movies, but I do think they stick to the heart of what X-Men is about. It is socio-political. It is about closeted, discriminated against people. It is about people struggling for control of themselves. You know, no better. You know, there's loads. There's like Rogue and Wolverine and in the previous movies, just battling to control, and they're afraid of who they are. They don't even know who they are. I mean, I feel that that's stuff that's always been explored in the X-Men world, and that's something that I think we continue to do in this one hugely. And so it still feels like it's got the DNA of X-Men, whereas Wanted, I wouldn't say necessarily had the DNA of the graphic novel.
It's The Treatment. My guest, who's terrifying comics fans everywhere with his take on Charles Xavier, is James McAvoy. He's also starring in X-Men Days of Future Past. But I think, though, because it was a really continental take. I mean, again, even the stuff between you and Michael Fassbender in First Class is very adult stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like there are two movies. The stuff with the gifted youngsters, if you will. And the stuff between you and Eric, as played by Fassbender, that's a very different movie.
Well, you know, I think that some of the best bits of, and some of the most celebrated bits of the previous X-Men movies have been the scenes concerning themselves with the relationship between Charles and Eric. And
I also would say, too, I'd take that one further. I think some of the things that have become the most celebrated about those movies is those scenes when the actors take ownership of the characters and not just the stuff on the page anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's what was happening in First Class.
Yeah, no, we definitely. And I was really pleased to be part of something that took those characters who were supporting lead characters in those movies, and they go, right, we're going to concentrate on this relationship. So it was definitely, it felt it was incumbent upon us to really go into that relationship quite deeply, as deeply as a film like that would allow. It had to be full. It had to be complex. It had to be dynamic. It had to be intimate if it's going to form the backbone of the movie, you know?
I just wonder if it was different for you playing Charles Xavier after you became a dad. I mean, because if you look at Eric versus Charles, they're two very different kinds of paternalism.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
Do you see what I mean,
maybe
though?
As a person, but as a dad, I think I would be more likely to side with Eric.
Really? Why is that?
Because Charles's way may take hundreds of years, and that's not going to benefit my kid.
Because you know the old joke in the comics is, you know, basically Charles is Martin Luther King,
yeah,
and Eric is Malcolm X,
mm-hmm.
And that sort of basically saying that if you offer strength and comfort, then people will respond to that.
Yeah.
It's kind of antithetical to you, is what you're saying. You want a more immediate reaction.
It's not that I want it. I think my instinctual reaction.
For your family. I mean, for your family's immediate future.
I think it's just symptomatic of the human race's immediacy and our reactiveness. You know, we're not thinking 100 years down the line. We're thinking, I want my kid to go to a good school now. Not thinking about, you know, slowly. We're thinking about, how do I change my life for the better right now? We are self-concerned and we are self-centered instinctually. We have this intellect that then combats that and is trying to sort of make us think for the future and think more positively and for the whole world and all that. But instinctually, we're selfish creatures as well. And yet, I just think we're double natured, you know, we've got this battle going on between us about selflessness and selfishness. And at times we're hugely cooperative and at times we're hugely selfish and insular. But yeah, I'm not saying that's what I'd want, but I think it's maybe how I would react in a scenario like that. I'd be there with Eric going like, okay, I don't want to do this, but death to the humans. If you're going to mess with us, then, you know, we'll mess with you back. Check me out. I can do cool things with my fingernails.
But getting back to, though, the way you play Charles Xavier, it's the most quietly forceful character you've played. Guys you play often tend to be prone to violent outbursts, and Charles doesn't do that. Even when he's self-medicating, he's still... And I just wonder where you found that steel to use for him.
Well, I don't know.
Did it just feel like something, once you started doing it, was it something you picked up from Patrick? Where does that come
from?
Not
necessarily from Patrick. Patrick's he's so contained, and mm-hmm. There's a lot of strength in that containment. I don't know. I always work backwards. I just work backwards from the story. So I read it and I kind of think, all right, what does the story want? What does the story need from this moment? What does the story require of me? What are my choices that would allow me to give the story what it needs? All right, that and that, not that, not that thing that I would like to do, but this, that, and the next thing. And ultimately, from working backwards, you get your character, I think. So I don't just go into a scenario or into a situation going, right, what would be interesting or what would be truthful, which is so unhelpful, I think. I work backwards and just go, what does the story want me to do? How can Charles and I help tell the story in this moment? And so all that kind of anger or steel or stuff was just born out of the story, really, and try to figure out how best to kind of tell it. Because the other thing is, as well, you can let your anger all out. You can let all that energy out, but you waste it. And there's nothing better than containing it, because the audience get to go subconsciously, it's going to come out, it's going to come out, it's going to come out, it's going to come out. So that when it does come out, they're not only prepped for it, but they've been anticipating it and they're anxious to see it. And hopefully it means more when it does come out, you know?
Because I just thought your conception of Charles Xavier is that he's probably always been an adult.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or am I mistaken?
No, well, with First Class, I definitely tried to make him less an adult and tried to, I wanted to make him more, my definition of an adult is somebody who respects responsibility and takes responsibility. And I didn't really, I thought I'd make somebody a little more glib, a little more flippant in First Class, so that by the events that happened to him in First Class, and certainly by the end, he is growing, he is maturing, and he is physically taking responsibility for his actions. He can't avoid it. And then the Days of Future Past, he's struggling with being an adult. He's struggling with taking responsibility. He doesn't want to take responsibility for himself or others. And so I don't really feel like, because if my definition of an adult is somebody who takes responsibility, I don't think he really takes responsibility until halfway, even three quarters of the way through this film, where he chooses to become himself after meeting himself. So, yeah.
Because I guess I just, even though, it feels almost like a two-character chamber piece when it's Charles and Eric in the first movie. And because of the pull that Eric inhabits, the way you play Charles is just more laid back.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm sort of conflating
definitely
it with
in First Class.
Yeah,
definitely, without a doubt. It was also, it was First Class was definitely his sort of origin story a little bit, whereas for Charles, it wasn't so much his origin story.
It becomes his origin story, though, doesn't it, by the end?
You get to see a little bit of who he is. I guess so. I'm struggling with it because it's just such a long time ago since I did First Class. But yeah, to play somebody who was, for me, there was no point in going back to the 60s and the 70s unless we showed that these characters were markedly and quite dramatically different at that time. They didn't need to be. Some people stay the same way their entire life, perhaps, you could argue. But there's no point in going back in their lives then and checking out what happened to them and stuff because they're just the same person. It's the same story. So it was important for me to show that he was incredibly different. And what I'm so glad with Simon and Brian Fox and Matthew Vaughn, who was originally part of that writing team as well,
and
for
Brian Singer, the
for
director
Days of Future Past, and Brian Singer too, is that they really allowed that to take a kind of fully formed and adult view on Charles. They didn't just go, oh, come on, let's just make him all right. Let's just make him, healthy, and we'll make him the leader of the X-Men and we'll get on with the cool stuff. They respected the fact that the character had more growing to do, and kept him markedly different from the Charles that we've seen before in the comic books, but also in the portrayals by Patrick as well. One day I believe I'll probably end up doing something that apes him a little more, because I think that's the natural progression, unless they want to do, we're on a different timeline now and we go crazy and, the character can become anything. But I think the satisfying thing is about saying, this is him, he's so different, one day he's going to become that person. So the journey towards that person is what's exciting, I think, isn't it?
It is, and we're out of time. I can't thank you.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
My pleasure. My guest is James McAvoy. He does a lot of different things, including Professor Xavier in the new X-Men movie, Days of Future Past. Also see Filth, which I guess is in some theaters on VOD, a recording engineer in New York at Argo Studios. Is Paul Ruiz. The show is mixed by Melissa Morton, edited and produced by Jenny Radelet. I have no powers. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.